Layer 527, FDR and the Pre-War Refugee Crisis. In recent decades, some scholars have criticized President Roosevelt for his approach to the pre-war Jewish refugee crisis. They maintain he could have lobbied Congress to liberalize American immigration policy and taken a strong hand with the State Department, which was administering America's strict immigration laws and quotas with cold indifference. Others insist such assessments fail to account adequately for the American public's pre-war isolationism and anti-Semitism. Touch the screen to explore excerpts of the historical debate that relate to FDR and the Jewish refugee crisis of the 1930s and reproductions of selected key documents from the FDR library collections. The rest of the descriptions in this exhibit consist of a series of documents and book quotes, each addressing different aspects of the crisis. You may continue listening to this information or press the right arrow key on your audio tour player to exit this layer of information and continue with the rest of the tour. Document 1, FDR's handwritten comment on a 1933 American edition of Hitler's Mein Kampf, My Battle, 1933. Hitler came to power in Germany just weeks before Franklin Roosevelt was inaugurated on March 4, 1933. Soon after his inauguration, FDR received this 1933 English translation of Hitler's treatise, Mein Kampf, My Battle, published by Houghton Mifflin. In translating and editing down the lengthy work, the publisher stripped out much of Hitler's anti-Semitic rantings and kept chapters on Nazi ideas of a restored German militaristic economy and society. The edited version outraged the American Jewish community. Roosevelt, who spoke and read German, was also appalled by the book. On the flyleaf of his copy, seen here, FDR wrote a rare editorial comment. This translation is so expurgated as to give a wholly false view of what Hitler really is or says. The German original would make a different story. Document 2, FDR's exchange of letters with South Carolina Governor I.C. Blackwood, March 31st through April 12, 1933. As Hitler solidified his hold on power in March 1933, roving gangs of Nazi thugs beat up and arrested Jews and vandalized synagogues. 40 Jews were dead by the end of June. News of these attacks was well publicized in the United States, and pleas for President Roosevelt to take some sort of action on behalf of Germany's Jews were sent to the White House. One of the earliest came from South Carolina's governor, I.C. Blackwood, who wrote to FDR at the urging of Jewish friends. In his reply sent 2 weeks later, the president advises Governor Blackwood that the attacks against Jews in Germany were being very seriously considered, and that very appropriate action has been taken. In reality, very little action was taking place. At this time, the Roosevelt administration viewed the situation in Germany in 1933 to be a domestic problem of its own and would not interfere diplomatically. Document 3, FDR's letter to New York Governor Herbert Lehman, November 13, 1935. Throughout the 1930s, President Roosevelt was kept informed of the growing refugee crisis in Europe by political leaders with ties to the American Jewish community, including New York Governor Herbert Lehman. Through these contacts, Roosevelt also learned that the strict immigration quotas in place at the time were not being fully and fairly administered by his own State Department. In this November 13, 1935 letter, the president advises Lehman of the results of his own examination of the visa issue, the legal limitations imposed by the Immigration Act of 1924, and his instruction to the State Department that German Jews applying for visas be given the most generous and favorable treatment possible under the laws of this country. Document 4, Memorandum for Miss LaHand from Stephen Early, November 13, 1936. Because of the country's isolationism and the immigration laws in place in the mid-1930s, President Roosevelt often felt constrained in taking a more proactive stance with regard to European refugees. In this November 13, 1936 memorandum for the president's private secretary, Missy LaHand, Press Secretary Stephen Early recommends that Roosevelt resist the temptation to issue a requested appeal on behalf of persecuted Christians in Germany. Such an appeal, in the opinion of Early and the State Department, would be an inappropriate expression of the president's preference for one group of refugees over others. FDR indicates his acceptance of Early's recommendation at the bottom of the memo. Document 5, FDR and Rabbi Stephen Wise's letters about the second inaugural address, January 15th through the 23rd, 1937. Rabbi Stephen Wise was an important and influential advocate for Jewish causes during Franklin Roosevelt's presidency. Wise sought, often unsuccessfully, to unify various Jewish organizations and movements in the United States, and his international network of contacts sent him information about the worsening crisis facing Jews in Europe. In January 1937, just days before FDR's second inauguration, Wise received information that the Polish government had declared 3 million Polish Jews to be superfluous. Wise wrote this letter to the president, urging him to use his inaugural address to assure the public that no one in America would be considered superfluous. As can be seen from Roosevelt's reply letter and this page from his second inaugural address reading copy, FDR took Wise's advice. He used Wise's suggested language almost word for word in the most recognizable passage of the speech. Document 6, transcript of FDR's press conference at Warm Springs, Georgia, March 25, 1938. On March 12, 1938, German troops marched into neighboring Austria, bringing more than 200,000 Jewish Austrians under Nazi control. Because a bill to increase immigration quotas could not pass Congress, FDR took executive action. He combined Austria's immigration quota with Germany's, thus increasing the number of Germans who could be considered for U.S. visas. The president announced the new policy at a press conference held in Warm Springs, Georgia. Document 7, anti-Jewish flyer sent to the White House, April 4, 1938. As the Depression wore on, reactionary groups in the United States searched for someone or something to blame for continued unemployment. Believing that new immigrants to the United States might take already scarce American jobs, these groups opposed any change to the country's restrictive immigration laws to help Jewish refugees. Because FDR had several prominent Jewish advisors, including Samuel Rosenman, Henry Morgenthau Jr., and Felix Frankfurter, anti-Semites labeled the New Deal the Jew Deal. It was alleged that Roosevelt was subservient to Jewish interests and therefore not acting in the interests of traditional Christian Americans. This anti-Semitic flyer was dropped by airplane over downtown Los Angeles, California, by an unknown group. It was sent to the White House by a concerned citizen of Los Angeles. Document 8, FDR's letter to Myron C. Taylor on the Avian Conference, April 26, 1938. Following the German Anschluss with Austria, FDR proposed an international conference to facilitate and finance political refugee emigration to other countries. In this letter, Roosevelt appoints Myron C. Taylor, a moderate Republican businessman, to represent the United States at the July 1938 Avian Conference. At the conference, Taylor announced that the U.S. would admit its full German-Austrian quota of 27,370 per year over the next 5 years, a number far lower than the 300,000 applicants on waiting lists for U.S. visas. The conference also established a new intergovernmental committee on refugees to negotiate with Germany on refugee matters. Ultimately, though, the Avion Conference was a failure because no country, including the United States, was willing to take in the large numbers of European Jews seeking safe haven. Document 9, Draft Statement by the President on Kristallnacht, November 15, 1938. Nazi violence against German Jews escalated on November 9, 1938, when gangs of stormtroopers rampaged throughout the country, destroying synagogues and breaking windows of Jewish business and homes. When the officially sanctioned violence, which became known as Kristallnacht, Night of Broken Glass, finally ended, nearly 100 German Jews were dead, and 30,000 men sent to concentration camps. President Roosevelt drafted this statement expressing his outrage at Kristallnacht and recalling the American ambassador to Germany. The changes and additions are in the president's handwriting. He read the statement at his November 15th press conference. Kristallnacht failed to change the policies of immigration, and no increase in quotas was proposed in Congress. But FDR did take executive action, ordering the indefinite extension of the temporary visas held by several thousand German Jews already in the United States. If the Congress takes no action, these unfortunate people will be allowed to stay in this country, FDR declared. I cannot, in any decent humanity, throw them out. Document 10, FDR's exchange of letters with Ernest L. Cline, November 12th through the 17th, 1938. The events of Kristallnacht were widely reported in the press, but public opinion on admitting additional refugees into the United States remained divided. Mail came into the White House both calling for action and demanding restraint in dealing with Germany and the Jewish crisis. This divide in public opinion placed enormous constraints on FDR's ability to steer Congress towards more liberal immigration policies. Shortly after Kristallnacht, Ernest L. Cline from Chicago wrote this letter to the president urging him to take such steps as may be deemed advisable to curb this madness. FDR responded a few days later and advised Cline of efforts by the Intergovernmental Committee on Refugees to negotiate with Germany for the orderly emigration of the unfortunate victims to other countries. Document 11, Telegram from a Fed-Up American Gentile, November 17, 1938. FDR's executive actions and public statements on behalf of German Jews after Kristallnacht also resulted in hateful and extreme anti-Semitic mail being sent to the White House. In this telegram, a self-declared but anonymous fed-up American Gentile from New Jersey threatened FDR with revolution or impeachment for being the puppet of international Jew warmongers and Washington Jewish minorities. The White House did not respond to this message. Document 12, Charts of German-American Bund Activities, 1939. As the world crisis worsened, isolationist and non-interventionist organizations increasingly challenged any efforts by FDR to aid threatened democracies abroad and prepare the nation for possible war. Their isolationist rhetoric was often mixed with racial prejudice and a suspicion of foreigners. One of the most ominous of these organizations was the German-American Bund, a domestic pro-Nazi group that preached fascism and anti-Semitism and had chapters across the country. The Roosevelt administration was concerned about the potentially contagious influence of the Bund and similar organizations on public opinion. It kept close watch over their activities, as can be seen in the series of charts provided to FDR by the State Department. Document 13, Eleanor Roosevelt's letter to Judge Justine Wise Polieu, January 4, 1939. In early 1939, Eleanor Roosevelt publicly supported a bill that would have allowed the admission of up to 30,000 Jewish children outside the quota system. Consistent with its restrictive interpretation of immigration laws and regulations, the State Department objected to the proposal. Supporters of the bill, including Rabbi Stephen Wise's daughter, Judge Justine Wise-Polieu, asked Mrs. Roosevelt to consult with the president on how best to proceed with the children's measure. In this letter, ER reports back to Judge Polieu that FDR recommended getting bipartisan agreement on the legislation and gathering as much Catholic support as possible. This last advice, to get Catholic support, was an effort to neutralize the opposition of the popular radio priest, Father Charles Coughlin, a vocal anti-Semitic and isolationist figure. Document 14, Memorandum for the President, June 2, 1939. As the Children's Immigration Bill worked its way through Congress in the spring of 1939, opposition to the measure intensified. Critics launched a public campaign against the bill, claiming that it would lead to unrestricted immigration. Polling showed that two-thirds of the public agreed. The bill's allies began to retreat, and by April, a private poll of senators showed hefty opposition. As the bill languished in committee, New York Representative Caroline O'Day appealed to the White House for the president to issue a statement on behalf of the bill. Realizing the measure was doomed to failure and that fighting for it might endanger his other foreign policy priorities in Congress, FDR ordered that no action be taken on O'Day's request. The Children's Immigration Bill was gutted in committee and never reached a final vote in 1939. Document 15, State Department Memorandum of Conversation Regarding the SS St. Louis, June 8, 1939. On May 13, 1939, 3 months before World War II, the SS St. Louis, a ship carrying 937 German Jews fleeing Nazi persecution, sailed from Hamburg for Cuba. Other ships had made the same journey, and their refugee passengers had disembarked in Havana. But the Cuban government, responding to corruption and anti-Semitic political pressure, ordered the enforcement of new visa requirements when the St. Louis arrived. 22 passengers who met the new requirements were allowed to land. The remaining passengers were forced to remain on board the ship. Negotiations with the Cuban government, led by the American Joint Distribution Committee, a private Jewish organization, broke down, despite pressure from the U.S. government, as can be seen in this Memorandum of Conversation written by the U.S. Ambassador to Cuba, J. Butler Wright. Tremendous public attention focused on the St. Louis. The ship's passengers even cabled the White House, but the matter was referred to the State Department. America's immigration laws did not permit their entry into the United States since they did not have U.S. visas. American diplomats were able to help resettle the refugees in Great Britain, France, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Denmark. But many later fell into Nazi hands during the war. Contrary to popular belief, there was no specific or official order by FDR refusing entry of the St. Louis refugees. Document 16, FDR's letter to Myron Taylor on the Roubli Plan to aid refugees. June 8, 1939. By early 1939, Nazi anti-Jewish laws had led to the confiscation of most Jewish assets and made it almost impossible for any applicant to meet the strict American visa requirements that refugees have sufficient financial resources to support themselves. Resettlement efforts by the Intergovernmental Committee on Refugees also ground to a halt as German officials refused to negotiate for the orderly emigration of German Jews. The committee's director, George Roubli, proposed the establishment of a private foundation that could accept donations from Jewish organizations outside Germany to cover resettlement costs. President Roosevelt hoped this plan would encourage other countries to open their doors to more Jewish refugees, since the costs would be covered by the foundation. In this letter to Myron Taylor, the American representative on the Intergovernmental Committee, the president instructs Taylor to throw his support behind the Roubli plan. But the outbreak of war on September 1, 1939, put an end to any possibility of a negotiated resettlement of German Jews. Document 17, Eleanor Roosevelt's correspondence in aid of refugee Fritz Becker. July 26 through August 1, 1939. Because of her well-known sympathies, Eleanor Roosevelt received many requests to assist refugees seeking visas to come to the United States. A Dutchess County neighbor, Mr. Hardy Steenholm, contacted ER and asked her to aid a German Jewish refugee in Yugoslavia named Fritz Becker. In this July 26, 1939 letter, Mrs. Roosevelt's secretary forwarded Becker's information to Undersecretary of State Sumner Wells and asked his assistance in securing a visa for the young man. Wells wrote to Eleanor on August 1, 1939, 1 month before the beginning of World War II, and advised her that Becker's visa application would not be reached for final consideration for a protracted period of time. Wells returned to Mrs. Roosevelt the photograph of Fritz Becker that she had provided him. Fritz Becker's fate is not known. Book quotes: Raphael Medoff, FDR and the Holocaust, A Breach of Faith. David S. Wyman Institute for Holocaust Studies, 2013, page 32. Despite his occasional expressions of sympathy for the Jewish victims of Nazism, President Roosevelt subscribed to a vision of America that had room for only a very small number of them. Richard M. Ketchum, The Borrowed Years, 1938 to 1941, American on the Way to War, Random House, 1989, pages 108 to 110. America's disregard for what was happening inside Nazi Germany was caused by more than unthinking prejudice. The easiest, most charitable explanation lay in America's preoccupation with itself. Henry L. Feingold, The Politics of Rescue, The Roosevelt Administration and the Holocaust, 1938 to 1945, Rutgers University Press, 1970, pages 16 through 18. Roosevelt knew that no exercise of personal charm could bring a change to the immigration law, and no administration attempt to do so was ever hinted at. Instead, the administration directed its attention to liberalizing the implementation of the law, especially the visa procedure. Richard Brightman, The Failure to Provide a Safe Haven for European Jewry, in FDR and the Holocaust, edited by Vern W. Newton, St. Martin's Press, 1996, pages 134 to 135. Mindful of the political difficulties at home, in the spring of 1938, FDR called for an international conference on the refugee problem and pressed for a new international organization. Robert L. Baer, with Brian Josepher, Roosevelt and the Holocaust, A Rooseveltian Examines the Policies and Remembers the Times. Barricade, 2006, page 127. In the immediate aftermath of Kristallnacht, Roosevelt proceeded with caution. Shockingly, nothing changed in foreign policy. No move was made to liberalize the quota system.